Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back.
We're so glad to have you here on this super beautiful Thursday morning, I hope.
Yes.
We're recording this and it's the afternoon and it's cloudy. So I'm just hoping for you guys the opposite. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Katie?
I'm good. How are you, Liz?
Well.
Yeah.
I'm hanging in there.
One day at a time.
Truly, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. Yeah, one day at a time. But luckily for you, you got something great looking forward to real soon.
Yeah, so when this episode comes out, when you are hearing my voice, I will actually be in a different country.
What?
I'll be kicking it in Iceland. Nice. With the glaciers and the...
the lagoons.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. Mm-hmm. Have you been out of the country before?
Never.
Okay. I am really excited for you. It's going to be so fun.
I'm very excited. And we've been trying to go to Iceland since June of 2020.
Yeah.
And obviously COVID.
Right. It's time.
Mm-hmm.
You've earned it.
So all of I'm you. Like, all right.
And then your sister just graduated, or she'll be graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great graduation gift.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. She posted something. Now I'll share it for the pod. She posted, you know, that she was proud of herself, as she should be for graduating. And I said, you know, you good job. Like, I thought I wasn't going to make it to graduation, and now I'm a nurse. And then she said that, I don't know if Katie told you, but I'm going to nursing school.
Yeah, she's going to Great Bay Community College, which is where I went.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I literally was like, yes!
So cute.
Another King nurse. I love it. That's awesome. Well, per usual, guys, the happiness has to be brought down with the sadness. So today's case, as you can tell from the title, is sad.
Mm-hmm.
They often are. We're coming to you from Maine today.
Yeah.
Physically and story-wise. And, this actually takes place in Kennebunk and Lyman, which are both towns that are very close to Portland and the border of New Hampshire and Massachusetts. It's pretty neat. I know a lot of people who live in Kennebunk. I know people who live in Lyman. I work pretty much on the town line of Kennebunk. Kennebunk is like a very posh town.
It's bougie, for yeah. sure.
Kennebunk and Kennebunkport, which is where
yeah.
the Kennedys had like a vacation home.
Mm-hmm.
It's very posh, which you don't hear a lot when talking about Maine. So that's where our story takes place today, and it's a mystery. You guys know we love unsolved cases. We do. Let's be real. We're always doing unsolved. So.
Yeah. Oh, this case was actually sent in to us from a lovely listener. This person has sent us a ton yes. of cases.
Yes.
Like, we have a whole section, like, from this person, yep. They sent us like a
seven.
Wealth of cases. So, thank you, Devlin, so much for sending this our way. Mm-hmm. We're very appreciative of you.
Yeah, because it was a really great case.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting to look into.
Mm-hmm.
And we love it when you guys send us cases. And we've made a point, we've gone through and we've tracked down almost every story that someone has suggested to us. So we're hoping to be able to give everyone a shout out if we do one that was given to us.
Yes.
So thank you, Devlin. We appreciate it. And we hope we do the story justice for you.
Mm-hmm.
And without further ado, today we will be covering
the murder of Mary Tanner.
Right. Let's go and start with our sources. Katie, what do you have for me today?
I have the MaryTannerStory.com, NewsCenterMaine.com, the Bangor Daily News, CrimeOnline.com, SeacoastOnline, PressHerald.com, and a mini documentary called Girl on the Bridge.
Nice. We had a lot of the same sources cool. today. The Mary Tanner Story I also use. It's a great website, obviously dedicated to Mary Tanner. Crime Online, Seacoast Online, New Center Maine, Justice for Mary Facebook page, and a thread from Web Sleuths, and an article from Web Justia. So, cool. Some good stuff. Alrighty, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about Mary Tanner.
So Mary Ellen Tanner, she grew up in a working class family. She was actually the youngest of four children.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom worked at the local diner, and her dad worked as an inspector at the Portsmouth, New Hampshire Naval Shipyard.
Nice.
She was very popular, very well-liked. She was about to go into her senior year at Kennebunk High School in Kennebunk, Maine, where she lived. She was actually a majorette in the school band. She had a boyfriend. They had been dating a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
She really liked him. His name was Michael Higgins.
Mm-hmm.
He had moved to Kennebunk, Maine from Waltham, Massachusetts, and she seemed to have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And she was also described as being everyone's little sister.
Oh, that's sweet.
She had a wicked baby face, too.
Yes.
You look at her pictures, she does not look 18. She was 18 at this time. She looks about 12, 13.
She really does. And I was going to say, her pictures, she is so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her face is so...
Her freckles.
Oh, she's
adorable.
Very, yeah. You know what? She kind of reminds me of... And this happens in 1978. She kind of reminds me of, like, a 70s, like, flower child.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She really does.
And she was such a free spirit, too. That's mm-hmm. how she was described.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
It really fit with the time. So she was very sweet. And in fact, their whole family was known as a pillar of the community. They were all very loved. So, you know, when this happened, it kind of was shocking and upsetting. And, you know, we say it all the time, it doesn't happen in these small towns. So it really rocked everyone,
mm-hmm.
Especially because she was 18. And she was about to go into her senior year of high school, which is so young. Also, and this could be important later, but she had just found out that she was pregnant. So she was probably, I mean, in her first trimester, like she wasn't showing or anything. She was still, you know, it was fresh pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I could tell from the sources, it was not a negative thing. You know, her boyfriend, they were still dating. They were still together. He knew about it, and that's whatever. It was still a thing, and I think it sounded like she was a little excited.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, everything kind of seemed to be going well. It was summer. She's a flower child. She's got a baby coming. Her boyfriend's cute or whatever. Great. Except one day it just, we never know how these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong place, wrong time. Coincidence, whatever it is. So one of the sources that we used, the girl on the bridge, which we found on the marytannerstory.com, is this new in-progress documentary that talks all about this weekend and all the moving parts, and it's really good, so we definitely recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very informative. So let's talk about the day in question.
So Friday, July 7th, 1978, like we said, Mary is 18 at this time. She started off her day by attending the annual dump parade in Kennebunkport.
When I read this, I said, what the fuck is a Miss Dumpy parade?
Yeah, it was like the dump parade or the Miss Dumpy parade. I was like, what is
that?
So I had to know more about this.
Yeah.
So I did a little research. it's not a thing now.
Good.
But back in the late 60s through the early 80s, there was a big push for environmental awareness, taking your trash to the dump, disposing of it properly, not littering, things we could probably go back to.
Sure, yeah.
So I guess the big weekly trip to the dump would be where you ran into your neighbors, mm-hmm. your community members.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be throwing out your trash, properly recycling. You know, cans go here, bottles go here. Oh, hey, Miss Johnson, how are the kids?
Right.
Talking about politics, catching up.
Mm-hmm.
So Kennebunk and Kennebunkport came up with a parade where people and businesses could make floats. And they would do insane shit. Like, they would take trash and garbage and recyclables and make these outrageous floats. You can mm-hmm. look at pictures. It's very creative, but it's very, like, what transpired this? Like, how did this happen? And part of the parade would be where girls would dress up in trash, basically. They would make these dresses and crazy hats and stuff out of garbage.
Yeah.
And at the end, it was like a pageant, but they would crown a Miss Dumpy for the girl that had the best dress made out of trash and recyclables.
Which, we were talking before we recorded, and why Miss Dumpy? Couldn't it be Miss Eco-Friendly or Recycle Queen?
Miss Sustainability.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up with Miss Dumpy? What the hell?
I know. Very misleading.
Very misleading.
I wasn't sure what that would be about, so I was like, we need some backstory.
And I'm glad you did, because what?
Yeah. So it doesn't seem like Mary participated in the parade. I don't think that was her style, but she definitely went. It was like a huge annual thing.
Yeah. Of note, even though this parade is so fun and exciting and probably smells really good, she was actually in a pretty sad mood that day because earlier in the week, her boyfriend has a brother and he died in a car accident. So she was preparing to go to his funeral in Waltham, Massachusetts the next morning. Mm-hmm. So she was trying to enjoy the parade, but she was really sad because she did know his brother and it just was obviously, you know, a tragic accident. So she was getting ready to go down to Massachusetts with her dad in the morning. Mm-hmm. But she was still trying to enjoy her day, and, you know. So she ended up going to a bowling alley that night. That's where she was confirmed seen there. And then later in the evening is when she was also confirmed to be at a party. Which, I mean, it's the 70s. They partied outside. I think it's just how it was.
Mm-hmm.
Bonfires and, you know, red Solo cups and
kumbaya.
Yeah, probably some marijuana because it's the 70s. Just a good old time.
Yeah, I was dying because the party spot was called The Hill. Like, they literally called it The Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hill off of Route 9. It's near the Rachel Carson Wildlife Refuge, for those of you familiar with the area. This spot was pretty popular for teenagers to hang out at and party because the appeal of this location was you could see if cops were coming from all angles.
Yeah. That's smart.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a teenager, you got to think like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good point.
You could see almost 360 around. So if you saw the red and blue lights, you could be like, cops!
Yeah.
And everybody would run and no one would get caught because you could see them coming from like miles away.
Yeah. It's pretty genius.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, Mary went to that party because she was, you know, she was 18. Everyone did. That was their thing. Every Friday, Saturday, probably more frequently than that, even. Mm-hmm. So she was seen there. And then after the party, she left with two of her friends to walk near a beach nearby. It's called the Kennebunk Beach. So after they went to Kennebunk Beach, they walked to somewhere called Cooper's Corner, which was in the lower village of Kennebunk. And this is where they separated.
Mm-hmm.
So her two friends went the opposite direction. She said, okay, I'm going to hitchhike home. See you guys later. Whatever. Hitchhiking, as we all know, a very popular mode of transportation back then.
It's the late 70s. Mm-hmm. Everybody and their mother's hitchhiking.
Yeah.
I mean, they all hitchhiked to get to the party on the hill.
Right.
This was not the first time Mary had hitchhiked home by herself, and her friends didn't really think to be like, no, don't hitchhike. That's bad.
No, we'll take you home.
Right. It was like, oh, okay, Mary, this is the fifth time you've hitchhiked this week.
Yeah.
Bye.
See ya. So she did.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and we know it now, hitchhiking never leads to anything positive.
No.
So, you know, she threw her thumb out and started to hike into the middle of town. And this was the last time she was seen alive. It was around midnight that evening. So, you know, into the very early morning of July 8th. And she was walking on the Moosam Bridge, the river bridge that's in Kennebunk. I drive over it every day, like every time I go home to New Hampshire. So it's there. And yeah, this was the last time she was seen alive.
Mm-hmm. This was so awful because Bill Lawrence, one of Mary's friends, he knew her pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he saw her get into a small car with three people inside that he didn't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And these were the people that had brought her to the bridge or nearby the bridge where she was walking.
Mm-hmm.
3 hours after Bill Lawrence saw her get into the car, Mary Tanner was seen on the bridge. Mm-hmm. And she actually passed by a group of her friends. They were driving by her in a car.
Yeah.
And she, you know, put her thumb out. She asked them for a ride. Her friends were like, oh, sorry, Mary. You know, we would love to, but we're actually going the total opposite direction. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, yeah, no worries. They're driving and they start to feel really guilty for leaving her behind.
Yeah.
They end up turning around and driving back the other way to go get Mary. And then when they came back, she wasn't there.
Yeah. And that must have felt awful.
How horrible. Like, they must have been hoping that she was picked up by somebody else and she made it home.
Yeah.
And everything was fine.
Which is what you would assume.
Right.
You would hope for.
Especially back then, late 70s. Yeah. Like, oh, somebody else picked her up, everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, unfortunately, like we said, last time she was seen alive, and of course it's no fault to those friends, but mm-hmm. I'm sure they felt terrible. Mm-hmm. So, Saturday passed and Mary didn't come home, and then Sunday afternoon-ish is when, similar to a Miss Dumpy parade, something that the kids of Kennebunk did regularly was head into this field. It's called Gracie Evans Field, and it's in Lyman, Maine, which is right next to Kennebunk. And basically, every Sunday, this skydiving company with helicopters would come, and they would people would skydive out of helicopters into the field, and the teenagers and the kids and the adults, everyone, would go and watch on the edge of the field because it was fun and, you know, chatty, and you were with everyone. Mm-hmm. It was great. You know, it was a great... So everyone liked to do that. And so, also, there probably wasn't much else to do.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, Maine. So this was just one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So... Unfortunately, this particular Sunday, the 9th of July in 1978, something really innocent and fun turned into something awful. And I was listening to this part of that little documentary, The Girl on the Bridge, mm-hmm. and they had this woman, her name was Lori Cray, who she's now an adult, of course, but she attended a party and was there, you know, was there that afternoon when the skydivers started to jump or, you know, just on schedule, and she recounted this event, which is heartbreaking. It really is.
22-year-old Dan Allo was piloting his Cessna 180 plane. He was taking off on this runway when he spotted a partially naked body lying in the grass at the end of the runway at this field in Lyman. Other people were in the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reassuring him, no, it's got to be a deer.
Yeah.
It's just a deer.
Right.
You know, we can take another look around when we circle back.
Because why would it be a body?
Right. That's not...
Yeah.
That's not what they were thinking. They're like, something's at the end of the runway. Mm-hmm. It's probably a deer.
Yeah.
They circle over again. The whole plane goes silent. They know exactly what they're looking at now. The pilot said over radio transmission, there's a woman down there dead. Somebody call the police.
Yeah. Awful.
And this field, this Gracie Evans Field, had this grass airstrip
mm-hmm.
where little tiny planes, like a Cessna 180 is not a huge plane. It's one of those little, you know, with the propeller on the nose.
Yeah.
One of those little planes, mm-hmm. woo, like you take for fun.
Right.
Like a local private plane. It wasn't a major airport. There's no airport. It's an airstrip.
Right.
So it's a very remote area in the sense where only locals know where it is.
Exactly.
This is important later.
Yes, exactly. And this woman, Lori, she recounts it and she says, you know, everyone's watching and they notice, you know, the plane goes up and then it stays low and then it does a circle and they're like, oh, are they gearing up for it? Like, what's going on? And then it does another circle and then it lands. And they're like, oh shit, there must have been a malfunction. Like, I hope everyone's okay. They were all standing there still talking and like, mm-hmm. what's going on? Like the chitter chatter. When one of the men who, he wasn't in the plane, but like ran the skydiving operation, he came over to the crowd and told everyone, you know, everyone leave. Everyone just get out of here. This place is going to be crawling with cops any minute. So everyone's like, I'm sorry, what? And that's when, you know, the police came and they confirmed that it was a body and not a deer. And this woman, Lori, she said, it was so sad. She was like 18. She said she remembers wondering and asking her friends, like, is that one of us? And yeah, unfortunately it was. It was 18-year-old Mary Tanner.
Mm-hmm.
Heartbreaking.
And her family was very startled by this news because mm-hmm. the day before and the day after Mary was last seen, that Saturday, that day in between,
yeah.
when she was last seen and when her body was found, she was supposed to go to her boyfriend's brother's funeral. Her dad was supposed to bring her that morning.
Yeah.
So when she didn't come home, the family's like, all right, you know, where's Mary? This is obviously very important to her.
Yeah.
They were going to get up early. They were going to drive. It's not a far, far drive, but it's far enough where, you know, there's no way you can hitchhike.
No.
From Kennebunk to Waltham. Her dad was going to drive her.
Yeah.
He was all set, ready to go.
Yeah.
She purposely did not stay out late partying because she knew she had to get back for this.
Right.
So when she didn't show up home or at the funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not a good sign.
Mm-mm.
So obviously, you know, they removed the body and they identified within a few days that it was Mary Tanner. Unfortunately, that one day in between, 1.5 days in between when she was discovered, it was so hot that her body had already started to decompose.
That's insane.
I mean, I can't even fathom that.
A day and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's July, but that's crazy.
I don't even know. She wasn't out there for long.
Mm-mm.
So the medical examiner performed an autopsy. They discovered that Mary had died from multiple blows to her head.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can really say luckily or this is good, but it seemed like the blows were so brutal that she probably was unconscious when she died, which you can only hope,
because
that makes it a little less awful. But those initial blows, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even want to imagine. And because of the state of decomp, the medical examiner couldn't determine if she was sexually assaulted. That's how bad it had been in that day and a half.
She was found only partially clothed. Her pants and her shoes were missing. She had significant injuries to her head. They weren't able to determine much aside from that. Like you said, they weren't able to determine if a sexual assault had taken place.
Yeah.
But they could tell that she was 3 months pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they were like, okay, who did this? And because of her decomp, there wasn't a lot of great evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was 1978.
Yeah.
So, then they started kind of playing around. Who could have done this? I think naturally, they decided, what about that boyfriend of hers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They probably thought it was her boyfriend at first because she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
They were young. Maybe he didn't want a baby.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? But he also was getting ready. I think he was in Massachusetts already.
He was, yeah.
Because his brother died and he needed to be at home with his family. So,
yeah, he was literally 2 states away.
Yeah.
He wasn't in Kennebunk on Friday. He was with his family.
Yeah.
If not with his family that whole week after they heard his brother had passed away.
Right.
So he's 2 states away. She was going to go down there to meet him. They weren't going to go down together. He was not in the area at the time of her murder.
Right.
So they figured that out. He is a very solid alibi.
That is pretty solid, yeah.
Solid as concrete.
Yeah, that's good.
Everybody can verify he was nowhere near her.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that clears him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good in a sense because she adored him.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to have his baby. She was so, so happy with him.
Yeah.
So it's good in the sense that he was not responsible.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been evil.
Right.
But it's awful in the sense that we don't know who did this.
Yeah. And he lost his girlfriend and a potential child.
Mm-hmm.
So after they ruled him out very quickly, they were like, okay, who else could have done this? And there's a few people that we found,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, I told you at the beginning, it's unsolved. So one of the suspects was a man named Bruce Foley. So Bruce grew up in Maine and he was actually a self-professed loner and had very few friends.
Oh
yeah.
I don't like that.
No.
I'm a loner.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of people I like.
I'm a lone wolf.
Ugh.
Like, go away.
Yeah, disgusting. In October of 1966, Bruce pled guilty to assault with intent to kill after he beat a neighborhood girl with a rock. And then he was paroled 1 year later. Got his GED, though, and he joined a motorcycle club. So he was back on his, he was doing okay. Forget the rock thing, right? And then, in this document, it's like an an affidavit thing from later years when he was in Minnesota. According to this, he claimed he assaulted 42 law enforcement officers during this time as a motorcycle club member. Yeah, like, what?
42?
That's such a, first of all, very specific number.
Do you keep a log?
Yeah. Why would you remember that? We hate the police, but what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what's up with that? What kind of motorcycle club is that?
That sounds like a motorcycle gang to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you keep a little diary of all the cops you assault?
Oh, my God.
Do you keep a little tally, a running tally?
Right. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's crazy.
Ugh. And it doesn't stop there. In October of 1977, 11 years later from that, you know, rock incident, Bruce was charged with rape and gross sexual misconduct after choking a different neighbor girl, forcing her to perform oral sex on him, and then he raped her. He then forced her into the living room to perform oral sex on his friend, and then together they raped her.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. He is a monster. Whether he killed Mary or not, monster.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was 1977. He was immediately charged. He was paroled in 1984. That's 7 years. I know. Ridiculous. At the time of Mary's murder, if you did the math, right, okay? So she was murdered in 78.
Mm-hmm.
He was arrested in 1977. So you'd think, oh, he's in jail. He can't have done this. He was actually out. He filed an appeal and was free to roam the streets of Maine until his court date in October of 1978. So while he was charged with this, he was essentially, he was like on bail. So he was out and free roaming.
Oh my. What?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So what we know is that he's a sexual predator and that he's very violent and that he has a history of beating a neighborhood girl with a rock in the head. Sounds a little familiar, right? Right? And he had so many other crimes that he had committed, sexual assault, assaulting 42 law enforcement officers, potentially being a part of a motorcycle gang. He was not a good guy.
Wow.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he was never questioned or charged with Mary Tanner's death, and he died in 2019 with no official word or confession, if there was one.
God damn it.
Yep.
He wasn't even questioned, like, hey, where were you the night of...
I don't think so. If they did, it didn't pan to anything.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It is. It's so sad. And that was, like, kind of their only real suspect for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Long time.
Yeah. There was actually one point in the investigation where 25 different detectives were assigned to this case.
Wow.
All of them were working together as part of their own kind of unit, almost. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a unit. Like, they weren't, like, the Mary Tanner case.
Right.
But it was these 25 detectives all working together and collaborating to try to figure out who killed this girl.
Yeah.
Hundreds of tips were sent in. They explored each one. No arrests were ever made, and none of the tips really led to anything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tips that came in was almost 20 years later after she was murdered in July of 1996.
Wow.
They got an anonymous tip that stated, go check out the bed of an old rusty pickup truck located at a farmhouse in Arundel, Maine. This is a town of Maine.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
So detectives get there to this farmhouse, and they find the bed of this truck. It's covered in leaves,
yeah.
Covered in debris, rusty as hell.
Ew.
And the truck's owner, or the owner of the property, told police that it had been there for about 10 years.
Okay.
The owner of the truck is not considered a suspect.
Okay.
His name is Larry Labrador. Hmm. He said that his nephews bought the truck secondhand about 10 years ago, and they removed the bed and left the bed of the truck in his yard. because they wanted the truck. They didn't want the bed of the truck.
Okay.
They were going to replace the bed or something with something less rusty, sure. I think. So they just left the bed.
Fair enough.
In this yard. Larry said that he had never met Mary. Neither of his nephews had met Mary. Mm-hmm. Police tried to take paint samples and run tests, but it seems like nothing really came out of it because of weathering and rust.
Right.
The theory that they came up with was whoever sold this truck to Larry's nephews, you know, 10 years ago, what if that was the bed of the truck that last had Mary?
Yeah.
And the previous owner of that truck was the person that last picked her up.
Yeah.
Because it seems very sketchy. There wasn't really
a like a proper, title.
Exactly. There wasn't a proper title. There wasn't a proper... It was like, oh, I'm selling my truck for cash.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And this truck bed was sitting there gathering rust and debris for 10 years. So any salvageable DNA or paint chips or anything, they weren't able to get anything.
Yeah.
So if that was a lead, it doesn't do much.
Yeah. That's so awful. Mm-hmm. That really could have been something, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And that, so that was another good, and it was so much later, but it was another good lead until it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
The only other suspect that they had wasn't even a suspect. It was just another guy. His name was Lloyd. He was 18, just like Mary, and he was at the party the night that she went missing. And he's in this The Girl on the Bridge, you know, documentary, and he says, I was literally just at the party, and people were suddenly like, maybe it was Lloyd. And so he was like, yeah, that kind of sucked.
Poor Lloyd.
Yeah, but he was never... he was questioned just because he saw her last, like, you know, at that party. Mm-hmm. But he was never, they were like, okay, go home, buddy. Like, what the fuck? That's not necessary. And unfortunately, it's been almost exactly 44 years and Mary's murder still is unsolved. Just terrible. She would be in her 60s now.
Wow.
Yeah. It's terrible.
There was a part in the documentary that said that Mary's mom had passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Her family was very saddened with the fact that her mom died without ever knowing what happened to her daughter or who was responsible.
Yeah.
But her family also said that they felt peace because they would be able to be together.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
Anyone with any information on the murder of Mary Tanner is asked to please call the Maine State Police. Their phone number is 207-657-3030.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's the murder of Mary Tanner.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful sunflower child, truly.
Such a cutie. Oh, my God.
Definitely check out our website and our Instagram because we have pictures of her on there.
Yeah.
And she's just so sweet. She just looks so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It's heartbreaking, and I feel so bad for her family and her boyfriend at the time. Just a very tragic, awful event in Maine.
So horrible, and he just lost his brother that same week.
I know. Ugh.
Oh, my God.
He's been through it,
yeah.
That poor guy.
Ugh. Check out the MaryTannerStory.com website, too, you guys, mm-hmm. to get more of an insight. There's some really great photos of her as well on there.
So many good photos, mm-hmm. like from when she was little and her in her majorette costume.
Yeah.
Very cute. It's nice to be able to get pictures right from the source.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely go and check out MaryTannerStory.com, like you said. And you can also find her picture and the synopsis of this story on our Instagram, which is TrueCrimeNE.
All lowercase.
Which is the same for our Twitter.
Yes.
You can also send us an email at truecrimene@gmail.com.
You could also head over to our website, truecrimene.com. We have a page set up for this case as well as our other ones. You could also head over to our contact page where you could send us cases, questions, comments, concerns, nice things. You can also be anonymous. We set that up for you.
Yeah.
We're so considerate.
We really are.
You can be anonymous.
Yeah.
Or you can leave your name and your email and say, hey.
We love it.
And if you send us a case from New England and you'd like for us to know who you are, we'll give you a shout out if we decide to cover the case that you suggested, like the case we did today. Thank you again, Devlin.
Yes, thank you. And if you want to be anonymous, make sure you specify that.
Yes, please.
Yep. Also, handy dandy on that contact page, Katie set up a little thingy for us.
Yeah, so this is a little something that we're trialing. It's called Buy Us a Coffee. Mm-hmm. You can click the little button that says, thank you, exclamation point, and you could buy us a coffee if you so choose. If you like what we do, show us some appreciation. We appreciate you.
So much.
Even if you don't buy us a coffee, it's okay. Times are tough.
Just listening, thank you.
Yes.
That's great. Absolutely. Listener. Amazing. So thank you for listening once again.
As always.
And if you think of it, rate, review. On Spotify, you can give us a star review. On Apple Podcasts, you can give us a star review and write a review as well. So if you do that, we'll buy you a coffee. No, just kidding.
No, but we will really appreciate it.
And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.